Next up, we have Damian Parr, and he comes to us from the University of California system, and currently he's serving as the Executive Director for the Sustainable Agriculture Education Association. He's going to be talking to us today about some of his exciting work and looking at the learning that occurs on student farms in some of our universities around the country. So let's welcome Damian.
Good afternoon. I'm going to present something somewhat conventional, which is results of a study that I did, and more details can be found. Figure out how to do this. The educational journal that's part of the Tri-Society, the Journal of Natural Resources and Life Science Education, just a while ago, accepted this paper, which is kind of the basis of this presentation. So it's going to be a bit traditional. And the study, the context of which is to look at student farms in a historical context, not so much further back from, say, the 60s and 70s, but when there was a very significant departure, when students were largely students, farmers, extension folks, but not so much faculty or administration, not the folks who had jurisdiction over what the curriculum would look like, but the folks that were on the margins, the students and the others, introducing ideas such as organic agriculture. Have anybody heard of that? Yeah. Issues of low input, ecological, issues around women in agriculture, farm workers, these sorts of issues that were very important to folks that were less privileged, less mainstream, but these were ethics and values that were important to them, and they were in their universities, and this is now the focus would be land grants. And why land grants? Land grants receive by far the majority of the public resources that go into agricultural education with adults in this country. So the study context is taking those two issues. What are the majority of our investment in agriculture education with adults, and looking at this phenomenon of introducing the idea around experiential learning and topics around organic and ecological. So what we see is that, again, the student farms, as they relate to organics and these other social environmental issues, they merged before formal programs were proposed by faculty and the administrations. And there's very little research out there to really understand that phenomenon and its causes and its possible impacts. And if we are also curious on how these innovations might take place society-wide and institutionally, we also might take a look at this phenomenologically. We're talking about change, institutional change, moving from a more narrowly focus on productivity and efficiency and profitability, and taking in all these other issues that have thus far been externalized. So studying where curricular innovation has taken place within these land grants that are otherwise resistant to this change could lend some pretty important insights beyond just the university. And as noted before, students are not faculty. They're not Senate faculty. They do not have jurisdiction over what curriculum looks like. So in this sense, they are marginal to that process. And then the student farms themselves, when studied looking at the history, again, these are the distinction I'm making is not whether if there were farms on colleges that taught agriculture, but more so the phenomenon of farms that were addressing these issues of externalization of the impacts and costs of, say, industrial capitalist agriculture. So student farms were these locations where students were historically were introducing those ideas around organics, social issues. And what we also see is that through the literature and testimonials that those particular populations are also the ones that have pressed through their expression of interest and enthusiasm, their demands, have pressed faculty administration to pursue looking at formal degree programs. So the study questions that I'm speaking to look at students, asking students, for the reasons I just discussed, what really their preferences were around effective learning in the topic of sustainable agriculture and food systems, and how their learning experiences on the student farms related to their formal degree programs, if they did, and in general, what motivated them. So methodology was focus groups. We're really looking at eliciting individual and information from individuals and groups. These are social groups that create student farms, their social interactions, wanting to get at what their thoughts and interests were as a group as a whole, as well as individuals. The populations, there were three different study sites, all land grants, the Northeast, Midwest, and Pacific West. And approximately 75% of all the students that were on the student farms at the time of the study participated in the focus groups. So the findings, and these probably won't come too much of a surprise, but what might be interesting is that they were very consistent across location, and that's across the nation as far as locations go. So I think that's of interest. That is that the students clearly identified that the integration of theory and practice through classroom and field work were most important for their learning, that learning-centered social arrangements emphasizing peer-to-peer learning was important, and that instruction as facilitation and mentoring worked best. And the least effective, some of these are just the opposite, but there's others. The imbalance between theory and practice, and especially too much abstract theory. So we're talking land-grant institutions, which most people at this conference probably come from, since these are the top-tier research institutions. Power inequalities between faculty and students in general, like I'm standing up here at a podium talking down to you, and supposedly I have some unique, rarefied and scarce information, and you folks don't have it. So things like that. Scripted activities, absence of student-directed problem-based learning. So these things are more tailoristic, factory. Yeah, I mean, the things that we resort to when we're under extreme pressure. And we're not really able to take advantage of the unique histories that our students bring to the learning experience. And then lastly, our instruction, our activity disconnected from the big picture and students' sense of purpose. Again, you need time to understand where people are, and then really to take the time to link it to some larger phenomenon like, say, Occupy Wall Street. Like, how does that relate to commodity trading and food prices? And then how does that relate to cultivation practices and organic matter or nitrous oxide, or, you know, going through those exercises. So findings further related to how they were related to their formal education programs. Overwhelmingly, the students suggested that they were not connected to their degree programs at all. And that's not surprising, because they came from the margins and came from the folks that were marginalized, and therefore it's a process of connecting them. And at this point, they are increasingly being connected, but at least at the time of this study, and these were very prominent land grants and student farms that have been in existence for over 10 years, they're still very much disconnected. They were largely limited to field trips, internships, independent study, and class visits. Activities, while they connected very well to their personal and broad educational interests, there was very few formal connections that they could take advantage of. And yet at the same time, some of the same students preferred that, because they associated a lot of stress with doing formal four-credit programs, and they appreciated the dynamism of the social and environmental, the environment really of the student farms, and having it be more of a stress releaser. So what motivated students to participate in student farm? And I do want to bring this back to issues of experiential learning in general, and what we understand about how people develop cognitively and affectively. People learn best when they're motivated. I don't know, that's pretty simple, but how do we really tap into that would be the question. How do we inspire folks and create learning experiences and environments that connect to their sense of purpose and motivation? And what these students at these farms suggested is that their experiences complement and integrate the abstract theory in the lectures and the readings with concrete and practical context where it's learning. So they essentially, I mean, if you look at this again phenomenologically, they went out and created learning environments so they could complement their rich lectures and readings and lab exercises that they were having on campus. I think that's pretty remarkable. And, you know, we owe them some applause for being that creative. That they gain agricultural production and marketing competencies related to organic small-scale farming. So they were also after a particular type of agriculture and really examining the science behind certain production practices. But they were also after gaining social competencies related to education. So how do you promote these kinds of ideas in the world, whether it's K-12 or adult or otherwise, and also community development, recognizing, if anybody's read Wendell Berry, what are people for? Like people farm. So people, you know, how do we engage society, how do we engage communities in addressing the problems and the challenges and opportunities for agriculture today? Lastly, to gain field experiences to complement academic studies in a number of other disciplines unrelated to agriculture and horticulture and production. If folks have ever been to a farm and talked to students, more than half of them are not even in the College of Ag or doing biophysical sciences. But some of them get actually convinced that that's the study that they want to do and they get drawn into those things. So it's a very interesting recruitment tool as well. So students are also motivated by working and being outside and accessing good food and joining a community, a sense of belonging to a geographical place, things that are often unique in terms of student clubs. Most student clubs don't have that rich type of place-based belonging. And then, of course, paid work is an important motivator, and a lot of students can't afford to participate in these without compensation of some sort. They have to be bringing income to pay their bills. So lastly here, but not least of important, is the empowerment they feel when their practical learning directly aligns with their values and their sense of purpose. So, I mean, we can all be honest. People who find themselves on these small farms that are organic and they're running community-supported agriculture, they have some issues with the way that the mainstream agricultural production and distribution and the distribution of access with food, the environmental impacts, et cetera. And they're looking for ways to learn through science, but through multiple disciplines, ways to bring about a different agricultural reality for people on the planet. And when they feel like they can do that, it's a real sense of empowerment. So implications, just to wrap up here, that the underlying premise of experiential learning facilitate learners is purposeful actions in pursuit of improving their situation. So, sorry if I said that really quickly. Tying back to what I said just earlier, students are looking to make a difference. I mean, the 18 to 20-something-year-olds, these folks are trying to change the world. They're trying to make a difference, contribute, and giving students an opportunity or partnering with students when they're trying to take advantage of opportunities and create opportunities is an excellent example of experiential learning, because it taps into the student's motivation, and it also taps into the opening for a project that can involve them in a lot of reflection and planning and experimentation and observation on their experiments. So these students, in this case study, they clearly demonstrated the process of constructing actionable knowledge and why it's important to look at student farms as a phenomenon for sustainable agriculture and food systems education, and in particular, how to deal with, again, the largest public investment in agricultural education of adults in this country, which is the land-grant university system. I'd rather have some questions here, so I'm going to move through this. I'm just going to skip the questions. Oh. Okay, great. So if you have them, I'll repeat them. Great. Yes. Yes, and at different stages of their development, there was different forms of funding. So often there was grants from within the colleges of agriculture. What I found is that departments, horticultural departments, deans of colleges, they use discretionary funds and they really recognize. I think there's a sentiment out there where creating a learning environment that draws students from all over the campus to recognize the value of food and agriculture, that's highly valued by some of these faculty in these departments and in the college, some of these administrators as well. So there's this goodwill of sorts, back to the gift economy of the university rather than a neoliberal market economy of the university, but actually giving opportunities to other folks around the university to acknowledge and recognize the importance of horticulture, agronomy, plant science, these sort of things. So that would kick it off. Federal grants, the USDA Higher Education Challenge Grant has funded a number of them. I'm not speaking just to the three I studied, but there's also foundation grants. Moving forward, a number of these programs have either linked more closely with degree programs and faculty who are able to then use them as lab space for teaching, and or they've diversified into offering open enrollment certificate programming and tuition based for anybody who would come and do a beginner farmer program. So staff have been able to be funded off of beginner farmer programming, but once you have staff running a farm, you can layer all sorts of other educational opportunities on top of that. I did not answer your question or ask your question. The question was how the funding for these campuses worked. Okay, thanks. Question? So the comment was that there are a number of additional funding opportunities or examples, and one would be produce production, community-supported agriculture, revenue generating from products from the farm, and then other student educational arrangements that would then fund the ongoing costs. Other questions or comments? If anybody has just comments, yeah. Okay, so the programs that started in the 60s and 70s. Okay, repeat the question. The origins of these farms. There's two questions, and then how to deal with the transiency of students and ongoing management requirements. So the three that I studied were all student managed or student initiated with collaboration from key faculty support and allies. And in terms of the types of student farms that I'm speaking to, which were focused specifically on introducing marginal ideas. So Davis taught very much ag education, very similar to what is being taught now at the student farm 100 years ago. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking how to create transformation in social institutions and agriculture. And what took place at Davis in 1977 was just that, students reclaiming agency around instruction, not only what was being taught, but how it was being taught. So, the question of how do they deal with transiency? There's a number of different examples from this study. One of them remains student managed, but there's a shared governance structure that's in place that has students as a majority vote on the committee. But there's the staff who are funded by the university to ensure things continue year to year and things are safe and sound. And then there's faculty administrators. And then the other programs have maintained, they've got professionalized and transitioned into staff that are either college paid or the staff are being paid off of some other certificate program like was mentioned. Thanks.